and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the chaos in Capitol Hill caused by our chaotic president, whose tweets and rhetoric risk blowing up frantic last-minute deals his own party is trying to negotiate to avert a government shutdown. While senior House Democrats introduced a resolution to censure the president for his recent crude racist remarks insulting the people of Africa today, Trump tweeted out his much anticipated fake news awards with a link to the Republican National Committee website, which promptly crashed. Jason Stanley, a professor of philosophy at Yale University and the author of How Propaganda Works, joins us to discuss Trump's latest attack on the truth just a day after a Republican senator had delivered an impassioned speech on the Senate floor lamenting Trump's use of Stalin's death threat in branding the press the enemy of the people. This a day after Senator McCain had published an op-ed stating, quote, "The phrase fake news, granted legitimacy by an American president, is being used by autocrats to silence reporters, undermine political opponents, stave off media scrutiny, and mislead citizens." Then we'll examine further the political rhetoric coming from the White House with John Murphy, a professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Illinois, where he studies the rhetoric of U.S. presidencies. He joins us to discuss the antics of the reality television star in the Oval Office, who continually creates his own tawdry drama with him in the starring role as the center of attention, and how much Trump has broken the mold of traditional presidential decorum and dignity, and whether respect for the executive branch can be restored. Then finally, Ambassador Norman Eisen joins us to discuss a new report he has co-authored at CREW, the Center for Ethics and Responsibility in Washington, The Most Unethical Presidency, Year One. He served in the Obama White House as special counsel and special assistant to the president for ethics and government reform and was the U.S. ambassador to the Czech Republic. And we will discuss not just the most chaotic, but the most unethical presidency in modern times and possibly in the nation's history. And joining us now is Jason Stanley, a professor of philosophy at Yale University and the author of four books, two on epistemology, and one on the philosophy of language and semantics, and the other on social and political philosophy. His latest book is How Propaganda Works. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jason Stanley.
Thank you, Ian.
And we've just learned minutes ago that the House passed a continuing resolution, which in effect kicks the can down the road on a party line vote. They managed to wrangle the Tea Party, who were being obstreperous. But this doesn't look good in terms of the Senate, where Paul Ryan didn't need any Democratic votes. He had a hard time getting Republican votes. We didn't need any and didn't get any, as far as I can tell, Democratic votes. But in the Senate, McConnell has a different situation on his hands, and he'll need about 12 Democratic senators. And it looks like they're not going to play ball. So we may have a government shutdown. That's just the breaking news, for what it's worth. Any comments?
Well, on the breaking news, no. I think that's the chaos that is, you know, it's not clear who that benefits. I mean, the chaos and spectacle are what is supposed to replace reasoned debate. That's what Senator Flake is critiquing. I mean, under, you know, we can't have reasonable policy debates when truth is destroyed. And that was the point of Flake's speech. And in authoritarian governments, authoritarian politics works like a constant reality show, constant spectacle. The goal of listening into politics is just to see what crazy thing is going to happen next. Because otherwise, in a stable liberal democratic society, it's supposed to work where politics is supposed to be more boring than that. So obviously we have a breakdown of the stable liberal democratic norms here. And it's that Senator Flake was decrying in his speech.
But isn't there another culprit here, not just Trump himself, because he is who he is? I don't believe he's a fascist in the sense that I don't think he has any ideology, and I don't think he has a fascist ideology. He's more like a Roman emperor, which there was a piece by Chris Buckley in the New York Times recently making that point.
But let's distinguish fascist governments from fascist politics. fascist politics, he's engaging in that. It's making us versus them distinctions. It's appealing to, it's destroying truth. It's destroying a common sense of reality. There's a certain set of boxes that you can tick off that Trump is very clearly ticking off, the destruction of reality being very central among them. And that is fascist politics, whether he intends, I mean, we know he does not intend to create a government controlled in a top-down way just by him. It's rather he intends to use fascist politics, it seems, to direct money to various oligarchical interests, as Vladimir Putin does. But the tactics he's using are clearly fascist.
Well, the distinction I wanted to make would be, if you use the analogy of the Nazis, we have a situation, to my mind, where the Goebbels, meaning Fox News and Rupert Murdoch, are more important than Hitler, meaning Trump, in the sense that we know that Murdoch talks to Trump every day, and we know from the Michael Wolff book that Murdoch hangs up the phone after talking to Trump and says, "What an effing idiot." Yet he is his major enabler. He secures this bubble of 30 to 35% of support that Trump has, where these people are immune to facts and evidence because they believe Fox News and its and Trump's lies, which Fox News propagate on a daily basis. So that's what I
find. I'm starting not to underestimate Trump's skills as a rhetorician, mm-hmm. as a politician. He is just extremely natural about, say, vilifying black immigrants or black Americans, or he's extremely natural about vilifying the press. This is something that he didn't need to learn from elsewhere, and he has no bounds on it. He just goes there straight to reinforce his base, to create fears and resentments. And this is the kind of politics that we do associate with certain kinds of regimes. Now, I agree that there's no comparison between the Nazis and Trump, because Trump isn't aiming for anything beyond perhaps his own self-interest. I think we should be clear that just the practice of the kind of politics that we're seeing is dangerous to our democracy.
Well, but how would you then assess the role of the chief propagandist, Rupert Murdoch? Because my concern is that if the special prosecutor comes up with the smoking gun, about 30% of the country will not believe the evidence, even though it may well be very convincing because of the Fox bubble. And these are people that are armed, and they may get very upset, and we may have some civil strife in this country. And if we do, I believe the blood would be very much on Rupert Murdoch's hands.
Well, I don't disagree. I just think that how many more smoking guns do you need? I mean, you know, we're in beyond, everything is normalized now. So, I mean, imagine if it had come out that President Obama had paid off an adult film star. I mean, it would have been Armageddon. But, you know, it didn't, it's not even news anymore. So, you know, what bit of information, we already know that Trump's associates and family members met with Russian-linked people in Trump Towers. I mean, the goal is to destroy any sense that there are facts and just make it entirely about who wins. And yes, Rupert Murdoch has incredible agency there and is doing that. But I don't underestimate Trump's skills as a politician. I think he just believes in us versus them. And that's the core of fascist politics, right? Us versus them. There's no reality, no truth anymore. It's just us versus them. So when people say Trump is not engaging in fascist tactics, I think what we're seeing is sort of the destruction of a liberal democratic information space where two people with different views can sit and agree upon a set of core facts. That's gone because, as somebody in the Bush administration said, I forgot, reality has a famously has a liberal bias.
Well, but reality is endangered, and you're describing, Jason Stanley, a cleavage here between truth and delusion, where maybe 65% of the population are on the truth side and 35% are on the delusion side. But this is not something that's going to go away, and it's not something that is likely to be healed, is it?
Right, because liberal democracy is incredibly hard. It's incredibly hard to get people to respect the truth when it goes against what they want to believe. And so once you start breaking down these norms, they're incredibly hard to repair again. And one has to make sure that in fighting those who want to break down reality, one doesn't engage in delusional tactics oneself. So there's a temptation to do that, and then things get really askew, because then no one knows what's true anymore. So that happens sometimes in these breakdowns of liberal democratic norms. But yeah, I mean, I wish I had some magic recipe, but Senator Flake was very accurate in his description. I mean, respect for the truth, you know, is vital. It's a vital democratic norm. It's the only way, speaking truth to power. Democracy is about equality and liberty, and the only way you can have those values is if somebody with much less power can say something true, and the person with more power has to accept that it's true. Once you destroy truth as a referee, once truth no longer is the referee, then it's just a spectacle. It's just watching your favorite sports teams and who's more powerful.
So if we are already in this tribal condition, is there any way to appeal to mythology of this country? You know, we pride ourselves in being one of the oldest democracies, if not the oldest democracy on the planet, and the beacon of hope, and et cetera, when in fact, as you just made it clear, we are anything but. We are an endangered democracy heading into some kind of authoritarian stew of strife and delusion. So, what would I mean? I'm you can tell, Jason, that I'm floundering here trying to think of what it could be that would wake us up to what is really endangered here, and a danger we all share.
It's a danger we all share, and I worry. I agree that appealing to our historic ideals—it's something that, say, that Martin Luther King did, that Frederick Douglass, going back, did, in their rhetorical, in their attempts to wake America up to remind us of our ideals. But when you talk about the mythology of our past, there's one politician who is saying they'll return us to a great past. And it isn't the one who prizes the truth. So, you know, we've always lied to ourselves about who we are. But I agree that you know, we have to. Flake's speech was very powerful. Senator McCain's Washington Post piece was very powerful. To see what that the United States president is enabling authoritarian regimes, and frankly speaking, genocidal tactic plans like the Rohingya. It should terrify every American that the Rohingya, who are being brutally ethnically cleansed, might be a genocide, one of the worst ethnic cleansings since World War II. And the government of Myanmar, ministers in the government of Myanmar, are calling it fake news that the Rohingya ever existed. You know, the influence, this is not just about the United States. This is about enabling these tactics, to all over the world. And just as we led, just as we often do lead democratic movements, it looks like we're switching around rapidly and giving the Myanmar government the tools it needs to defend ethnic cleansing.
Well, it is appalling that to recognize the disastrous mistake the American people have made in electing somebody that's so manifestly unqualified and that's such an evil, destructive person. And it's extraordinary to think that a man who's only interested in himself could do so much damage to others. But that is the reality. And just in the last 30 seconds, is there any... can you...
hope.
Give us exactly hope. Hope.
I think you were right. We have to remember we're Americans and the truth is greater than us. If we are ever, our children are here to, if we care about our children being able to relate to other citizens, we need to preserve the truth. We need to go beyond tribe. We need to remember that at some point, your tribe will be at risk, and that's why we have liberal democracy. That's why we have shared reality, to accept facts so we can all agree on something. And that's the platform that makes us all citizens of the same country, that we share a common reality.
Well, Jason Stanley, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Jason Stanley, who's a professor of philosophy at Yale University and the author of four books, two on epistemology, one on philosophy of language and semantics, and one in social and political philosophy. And his latest book is How Propaganda Works. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into how much Donald Trump has broken the mold of traditional presidential decorum and dignity.